Welcome to the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast, discussing and analyzing the legal implications of national security issues across the globe. Our hosts, Hogan Lovells attorneys Michael Scheimer and Tim Bergreen, have decades of hands-on experience in national security issues and how they relate to their clients' day-to-day goals. And now, here are Michael and Tim.
Tim, happy Friday.
Mike, good to see you again. Been a warm week. I like that.
Yes, spring is definitely happening in the D.C. area. We didn't really get much of a winter. So welcome again to another episode of the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast. We are joined today by two of our colleagues, and I will let them introduce themselves in more detail. We have Brian Curran and Ann Saladin from our international trade practice. Brian, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So I'm a partner in Hogan Lovells International Trade and Investment Practice. Originally, I came to the firm, I focused on export controls, sanctions, and CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. And these days, I focus almost exclusively on CFIUS and on our topic for the day, which is an outbound investment screening. I spent some time in government, about 10 years in the intelligence community, and then I've been with Hogan Lovells since then.
Fantastic. Anne?
Hi, everybody. Mike and Tim, it's great to be here and always great to be talking with my partner in crime, Brian Curran. So my name is Ann Saladin, and I joined Hogan maybe, I'm going to say, 4 years ago. I'm a partner in the International Trade and Investment Group. Before that, I spent about 20 years with the U.S. Department of the Treasury, mainly working on CFIUS matters, Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States matters, but also some other things like sovereign debt restructuring, et cetera. I was part of a small office that handled the legal aspects of CFIUS for Treasury, which runs the CFIUS process. I've had a great time being at Hogan Lovells, and I look forward to more years here.
Great. Ann and Brian, thanks so much for being here. You know, why don't we start, let's sort of level set for the audience a little bit. You've referenced CFIUS, foreign investment. Can you explain, you know, just sort of quickly what, you know, CFIUS is, what it does, you know, how is foreign investment in the United States, incoming foreign investment, regulated?
Yeah, sure. Maybe I'll start and just kind of give sure. The basic description. You can maybe talk, add to that. So CFIUS is this interagency, U.S. government interagency committee that vets, for national security reasons, foreign investments in the U.S. So the concept is that there are certain kinds of investments in or acquisitions by foreign persons that are going to raise national security issues. And this committee looks at those to examine whether they do raise national security issues. And in some cases, they would seek to send the matter to the president to have the president block those transactions in the most egregious cases.
I just might add here that the committee is comprised of a number of agencies. It's all the usual suspects you might imagine. State Department, DHS, Treasury runs the process, DOJ. And it's kind of a committee like no other. It's really a different animal, if you will, within the United States government, because these are all agencies who have their own independent agendas. For example, you might think of DHS as being national security focused. You might think of commerce as being encouraging of international investment. And they all have to come together in one room and make decisions about cases by consensus. So it's a very interesting process, unlike no other.
So, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, we want to be able to regulate how foreigners, especially from certain countries, you know, they're potentially sort of adversaries or competitors, you know, can access, you know, U.S. technology, U.S. intellectual property, and other U.S. know-how. But what I think we're going to be talking about this afternoon is outbound investment, where U.S. capital is flowing to other countries. And why, I guess, sort of as a threshold matter, why is that even a concern, or should that even be a concern for the U.S. government?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is one of those areas where that both the Biden administration and Congress have been talking about increasingly over the last couple of years. And the concern is that, as you sort of touched on, Tim, do we have a situation where U.S. companies, you know, particularly, for example, PE funds might be helping to fund the Chinese military complex. We've had, you know, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, has raised this. Members of Congress have raised this. And so I think, you know, what we've seen over the last couple of years is that Congress and the administration are examining ways to what they think of as kind of filling a gap in a broader national security strategy vis-a-vis our adversaries, as you point out, China, Russia in particular. For example, we've got export control laws that are aimed at restricting certain kinds of technology, let's say, from going to China. We've got economic sanctions laws, and to an extent, export control laws too, that are aimed at ensuring that certain kinds of transactions don't occur with particular Chinese parties. And then we've got CFIUS, which is focused on foreign investments inbound, as we were talking about before. And what Congress and what the Biden administration have focused on now is what we don't have is sort of a comprehensive regime that addresses the risks of Americans effectively facilitating, funding, bankrolling to a certain degree, the Chinese military complex. So in last Congress, Senators Cornyn and Casey introduced legislation to essentially put in place an outbound screening regime. That ultimately was not enacted. The Biden administration is now considering doing the same thing, although likely narrower, a narrower regime than was originally contemplated in the proposed legislation. And it looks like that's where it's likely going to play out, is through an executive order. It could be as soon as in the next couple of months, but for the moment, it looks like the regime is coming and probably through an executive order.
One thing might add in here, Brian, is that, in fact, although this has been considered the concept of an outbound regime for several years now, it was also considered in connection with the new law that put in place the new CFIUS regime and rejected at that time. So it's not a new concept, but it has gained steam over the last, I would say, year for sure.
So if we could think of this as the reverse CFIUS, to use like a colloquial term, it sounds like there's not currently statutory action. We might see something in the form of an executive order. Do the two of you have a sense, you know, what it might involve? What would be within scope? What would be out of scope? Or is it too early to tell?
You know, I think probably the best thing to say is watch this space. On the other hand, we have been, over the last year, we have gotten a much better sense of what the likely parameters will be. But the specifics of it are not fully fleshed out and will be key, particularly as to the scope of the mechanism and the nature of the mechanism. But here's what we think is very likely. One is first that it will be that there will be a committee which is similar to what we see with CFIUS, that is likely to involve the establishment of a committee similar to CFIUS that will review certain transactions. Now, what types of transactions and activities that will ultimately be reviewed is not yet fully fleshed out, but we think that the regime is likely to be narrowly tailored. And so it's very possible that it could be focused really very closely on certain sensitive industries such as AI, quantum computing, and semiconductors. So I think that the other piece of it that's yet to be decided, or one of many pieces that are yet to be decided, is what will happen to these investments when U.S. companies want to make them. Is it something where they can just notify the government and go? Or is it something that there will be blocking authority? Or will there be a blanket prohibition upon investments in certain strategic adversaries in particular areas? So I think it remains to be seen, Mike, about that. But I think as we move closer to an EO being issued, as we think will be the case, we're getting a lot more information about what it's likely to involve.
It's worth noting that, you know, when Ann was mentioning those particular industries, you know, AI, semiconductors, you know, et cetera, that this sort of marries up with what we've seen Trump administration and the Biden administration focus on in terms of both export controls and CFIUS reviews, right? The concerns about the outward technology flows have been focused on those industries, among others. And the CFIUS reviews, when the government is concerned in particular about threats from foreign investments in U.S. technology companies, they've been concerned to a large degree in those industries as well.
So I want to go back to the rationale in a second, but actually I just wanted to throw out there's sort of an interesting factoid that I found this afternoon while I was sort of sitting around thinking about the podcast. This came from the Rhodium Group, which is a research firm that does a lot of work on China, and that basically U.S. investors carry out about 3,000 transactions a year, either FDI or venture capital, and about 500 of those are worth $1 million or more. So I think most likely the subset of transactions is going to be fairly small. I don't know, but it would seem to be. But I want to just pick a little bit at the rationale for this. The concern for Chinese or Russian or Iranian investment in the United States is that it gives them sort of proximity and access, if you will, to our technology, our business processes, and frankly, the people who are running companies and making this stuff. Why don't we think it's a good idea for American investors to be involved with Chinese companies and sort of getting that same kind of information and bringing it back here to the United States?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Tim, but I think it dovetails with the inbound investment restrictions as well, when you think about it. And that really is, you want to prevent harm to national security, bottom line. And I think that, you know, one way to do that is to vet inbound investment. But another way to do it is to prevent U.S. investments in, for example, Chinese companies or Russian companies that may be adversaries. Because effectively what's happening there is U.S. companies are funding technological development. And that, I think, is viewed as potentially to the detriment of U.S. national security. It also potentially compromises U.S. technological leadership. And as I think Brian said earlier, it's seen as supporting potentially military industries in those strategic adversary countries. So I think it's really, the way I think about it, is a kind of a whole of, you want to capture every area in which national security is potentially compromised. And this is but one area, a hole, really, if you will, to plug.
Yeah, and I think it's similar to the longstanding issue that we have had with intelligence operations or cyber operations too, where, for example, you penetrate an intelligence service of an adversary or you penetrate one of their networks. And the question becomes, do you stay in the network? Do you stay in the service as long as you possibly can for all of the collection benefits? Or do you take some action to take something down, et cetera? And so I think some of this comes down to the details there. What are the advantages that we're getting that we could get from the knowledge, as you were saying, Tim, that we gain from knowing more about what's going on in these Chinese tech industries versus any of the harm that we might be doing from propping them up and bankrolling them?
So let's talk a little bit about how this actually affects industry, will affect industry, because again, we don't have this regime in place yet, but it sounds like, you know, there's certainly a lot of parameters are already determined, perhaps. What issues do the two of you foresee for corporations and international investors, and how do you advise clients in regards to risk mitigation, given this potential new screening mechanism? And I guess part of that is also sort of previewing it now, you know, what have you been advising sort of clients to contemplate here? And then I guess maybe what are the open questions about the regime that we don't know until it's put in place? So for example, I think, Anne, you've already touched on it, that it may be some of the cast of usual suspects in the national security apparatus that are on this in reverse screening, but we don't know that yet.
Exactly. Yeah.
So maybe another part of that too would be how, this is maybe another question too, sorry to pile on that, is, you know, how would you expect this to be maybe different than our inbound investment approaches? You know, are there other stakeholders or players here that are going to have a more prominent role than in the inbound, you know, CFIUS world? It's actually three questions. Sorry.
Yeah, I honestly think that the biggest challenge for our clients, for any company out there right now, is the absence of information about the details of the regime, right? So the key questions of who it's going to cover, what types of investments or capital flows it's going to cover, and even the precise industries are all unknown, even if we sort of have, the administration has been repeating that it's going to be a narrow regime. And even if we kind of know, have a decent sense for it, it's probably going to be focused on certain sectors we've been talking about, chips, quantum computing, AI. So it's really difficult for any company because of all of those, because of the things we don't know. So, I mean, like, for example, if you're a UK arm of a US PE fund and you invest in a Chinese AI company, are you going to be covered by the regime? We don't know, right? If you're the US arm of a German controlled fund and you make an investment in a chip company in China, are you going to be covered? So these are the kinds of questions that we don't have the answers to that show you how potentially how wide-ranging a regime like this could be. You know, this is why there's lots of questions for our clients. The other thing is any kind of regime, like any kind of new regulatory regime, is going to bring costs for our clients, and it's going to bring uncertainty, right? So they're going to have, they're going to be compliance costs because you're going to have to figure out how to comply with the regime. And then there's going to be uncertainty, as with any new regime, because you're going to have to try to figure out, is my transaction, are my investments subject to this regime? And early on, as with most of these, there's going to be uncertainty both on the private sector side, those trying to comply, and on the government side, as the government actually tries to interpret its own, let's say, regulations with a new outbound investment regime. So to one of your other questions, Mike, about, you know, what should companies do? Like, how do you react? How do you deal with this now? I would say one thing that companies can do is we do have a sense that this is going to be targeted at these strategic adversaries of the United States, including China and Russia. So one thing you can do is take a look at what your exposure is to those countries, right? We don't know the parameters of the regime yet, but see what kind of exposure you have to those countries, just so you have a little bit of a head start. You don't have to be gathering that information once the regime is in place. See what your exposure is. And then the second thing I think is sort of, in a way, the more obvious one, which is just tracking these developments, figuring out, you know, watching the legislation, if that moves, and particularly if something comes out via an executive order. And part of that in terms of tracking might also be thinking about hiring an advisor now who has some expertise in these related areas in national security, CFIUS, et cetera, because you want to be in a position that when this goes in place to be able to react quickly, not only from a compliance standpoint, but from the standpoint of, do we need to change the way we do business, the way we invest, et cetera, based on this new regime?
It's all about getting left of boom, right, Brian?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I might add that I just agree with Brian on these, you know, the potential ramifications for U.S. business are not known now, but it's worth monitoring. But I also want to mention, too, that the U.S. government is not unaware of the fact that there are going to be potential ramifications for U.S. companies. And they have been very active in meeting with stakeholders and the private sector to try to understand what the issues might be, including the issue that Brian sort of referred to, like who is covered, because there are some really thorny extraterritorial issues that are raised by certain entities being covered. So I would say that the, like in Firma, which was put in place, that's the CFIUS regime, the inbound regime, there was a lot of consultation with the private sector. And while it doesn't mean that there won't end up being costs, I think it is very clear that the government will certainly take some of those issues into consideration in making the executive order.
So, Anne, I'm going to throw this last question at you. You know, this sounds in a lot of ways like a real winner for, you know, U.S. national security and kind of like a no-brainer. But I think, as you've mentioned, you know, when Firma was considered, you know, this was left on the cutting room floor. You know, as Brian noted, there was legislation last year that seemed to be gathering some steam at one point that it did not make it through. So obviously there are some negatives here. So what are the drawbacks, both to sort of an EO regime and to potential legislation?
It's a really good question, Tim. You know, Brian talked about the drawbacks for U.S. companies, but I think we have to really think about the fact that there are more fundamental challenges for the U.S. government here, too. For example, if the U.S. puts in place a regime under which its companies are precluded from investing or restricted from investing in China or Russia or another strategic adversary. However, other foreign competitors might not be subject to that kind of a regime. And so As a result, it's possible that those foreign competitors will continue to fund the very adversaries that we or the U.S. government would like to prevent funding for. So I think that's one question. I think we've heard that there are some discussions between the U.S. government and its allies on this issue. We haven't really heard, and I look to Brian and others here, we haven't really heard of, for example, definite European plans to put in place a similar regime. This was an issue, frankly, with Firma too, because Firma, with respect to inbound investment, if you put in place a very robust regime there, and you don't have a robust regime put in place by other foreign countries, then you just risk the migration of foreign investment out of the United States. So I think that's one big thing. And then I think there's another point, and Brian, maybe you want to elaborate on this, which is the question of whether U.S. companies, when they are investing in, for example, Chinese companies, it may be that by being precluded from doing so or restricted from doing so, that we are actually harming ourselves in terms of taking advantage of the innovation that occurs there. Brian, you have any further thoughts on that? We had been talking about it earlier.
Yeah, it sort of just picks up on the point we were talking before about the analogy to intelligence operations and the pros and cons of once you're in there and have the information, is it better to stay or better to, you know, in this case, to cut off that funding from U.S. companies, from PE in particular. But, you know, I think you could see a scenario in which U.S. companies, U.S. investors could learn from developments in China, learn from things that they're doing, but also could see gaps, could see flaws, could see vulnerabilities in what they're doing, and U.S. national security could benefit from those. So I think these are all the sorts of pros and cons that the administration is grappling with. And then, Anne, just to pick up on one other point that you made about, you know, whether other countries are going to follow, you know, some administration officials have pointed out that in connection with CFIUS, for example, and the expansion of CFIUS's jurisdiction a few years ago and introduction of mandatory filing regimes, that the U.S. didn't get immediate reaction from other countries to introduce exactly the same kinds of regime, the same kind of regime as the United States has now with the expansion of CFIUS's jurisdiction and mandatory filings, but that eventually the number of countries have come along and done just that, the UK perhaps being the most prominent among those. So some of the administration officials have pointed out, like, maybe we do need to go first on outbound investment and then have other countries follow and encourage them to do so.
Yeah, you know, in Firma, just, it's interesting because it's kind of a carrot and stick approach here, because in a way, because there were some provisions of Firma that encouraged other countries to put in place similar regimes. I'm not sure that we'll have that here, but it would be interesting if we did.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this is great. I think we've covered a lot of ground here. I would suggest, I think, you know, Tim, we're going to need our colleagues back on the show when we see the government's release of, you know, executive order and I assume subsequent regulations coming out from that. But do you guys have a sense, actually, sort of how imminent this is, you know, in terms of action by the Biden administration, or is that sort of a black hole?
Well, one thing to watch is that there are Treasury and Commerce reports, I think, due out either next week or the following week, at which they're simply notifications, but they are supposed to talk about what those agencies have done to push forward on this regime. So I think it will be very interesting to see those reports. So that would be the first thing I would mention. But what we're hearing is next couple of months for an executive order. So we'll be back with you sooner than later.
Exactly. I would say in a couple of months, we'll be back on talking about what this executive order looks like.
So, Anne, that, are those the omnibus reporting requirements? Is that what you're referring to? The 60-day ones?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I spent a lot of time on the Hill, and I don't recall ever getting a report.
Tim's very skeptical about congressionally mandated reports.
Well, so I have to tell you that when I was at Treasury, there were a lot of congressionally mandated reports that eventually got done, but they were not timely. So we'll see. We'll have to see. You may be right.
The timing issue is one that I think the executive order has been delayed, I think, in part because of the administration's efforts to take industry input. So industries, to a certain degree, should be happy with the delay, because I do think, I'm not saying all of the delay is because of that, but I think part of it has been the administration's efforts to take more input and suggestions from industry, financial industry, tech industry in particular.
You know, and one other thing, if I can mention this, there was a House Financial Services Committee hearing, what, about a week or so ago, and Chairman McHenry and others, I think, sounded a cautious note on outbound investment screening. So while there's sort of a, I think, a generalized inclination towards it, I think there's a growing realization that it does not come without costs. So
yeah. It's super complicated, and the devil's in the details.
Well, we'll have you back on, and I'm sure we'll be unpacking it when we have action by the government. So thank you both again for joining us on the show. We're going to have you back on both for this, and I think probably other, I'm sure there's other national security topics that are cross-cutting that we'll have you back on, maybe before actually the outbound investment screening action. So everybody stay tuned. So everyone have a good weekend, and we will see you on the show in the future.
Same Great. To you. Thanks, yep. Thanks Brian. Well. Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast. To learn more about top 10 global law firm Hogan Lovells with more than 50 offices worldwide, please visit HoganLovells.com.